So it doesn't mean that there isn't more growth. And of course, people can learn all their lives. I basically average 2 books a week and always have for decade upon decade. So I'm still learning. One can still learn. But you better take advantage of those early years. That's when opportunity is really not.
Welcome to Opportunity Knocks. I'm your host, Todd Patton, and this is the 14th podcast I've done. My favorite one is today. I haven't even done it. I can tell you it's my favorite, and it's because who's sitting across from me? Dave Lawrence, man, it is such an honor to have you here. Everything you've accomplished in business, in nonprofit, which we're going to get into, I told you, you're a mentor of mine. I really look up to you, and I appreciate you.
I'll try to earn that. Thank you.
You always do. So, Dave, let's go back. So the podcast is called Opportunity Knocks, and the goal of this podcast is to speak with successful people who have made it. You know, they've done well in life, and where was opportunity knocking? And I want to go back all the way back to your Charlotte days, because that's where it started from a career wise, right? Is at the Observer, right? Charlotte Observer, and you weren't a publisher there; you were an editor. Okay. How did that happen? How did you land that job?
Well, you know, truthfully, Opportunity Knocks has sort of been all my life. I grew up on a farm. I'm one of 9 children, 8 years until I was 14. The farm didn't do so well. It was in upstate New York. We didn't really have any money, or very little money. Every one of us went to either Florida or Florida State. We grew up in a family where we were expected to be good people and expected to make a difference. And I think everybody did in one way or the other. My father had returned to the newspaper business. I so loved my father that I went into the newspaper business. And I worked for 7 newspapers over 35 years until I decided I needed a different chapter. And it was the governor of Florida named Walt Giles, very honorable.
Sure.
Person, and got me interested in the subject of early learning and early childhood study. So we have 5 children I knew nothing about, and I decided to retire and work full time. But I had been in a business that at that time, the newspaper, was very profitable. So when I was at the Miami Herald from 89 to 99, we had close to $300 million in revenue. Had an 18% operating. When I went there, we had 700 full-time equivalents. We had hundreds of people in the newsroom. That's all been shredded, generally, in America. And Walton Child asked me to chair the statewide task force on early learning, school ready.
And how did that connection with Walton Child happen, Dave?
I knew him because the newspaper business was a very significant business, and the publisher of the Miami Herald would know a whole bunch of people, and I certainly knew him. I always loved politics and public life. And he sort of said, would you do this? And so I took 2 years as a civic assignment and learned a whole bunch. And despite the fact we have 5 children, who are now 59 to 39, I knew nothing about the subject. I didn't know that 85% of brain growth occurs by age 3. I didn't know that half the children in Florida are not ready for school, go to school. I didn't know that 90% of children in America go to public school, as I did. I didn't know that if you had 100 children at the end of first grade, 4 years at the end of fourth grade, 88 of them are still 4 years. And I didn't know, this is an amazing statistic, I didn't know that 3/4 of people 17 to 24 years old cannot enter the American military. Substance from an academic challenge, physical challenge, criminal justice. You ought to be worried about the national security of the country you love. That many people are not qualified to enter the American military.
What an amazing statistic you just said. 85% of the brain's growth is done at up to age 3.
Yes.
That's remarkable.
So it doesn't mean that there isn't more growth. And of course, people can learn all their lives. I basically average 2 books a week and always have for decade upon decade. So I'm still learning. One can still learn. But you better take advantage of those early years. That's when opportunity is really knocking.
Amazing. Now, what about some of us that, and I'm going to tell you, and I told you this story before. I think the first time I met Dave said to me, his first question was, what's the last book you read?
And, I asked a lot of people.
And I said, uh-oh. And I'm thinking, I hate to say this, but Old Yeller, I think. When I was in third grade. And reading, for me, at least, when I was in high school and middle school, elementary, is I would read a couple sentences, and then I'd lose track of what I was reading. Audiobooks, I love. I think it's just,
I go walking 4 days a week, at least 4 miles each time. And I listen to Audible, I listen to books, and I also read them on Kindle. And I also buy the book because I sort of like to have the book nearby. And I do a book group in my home and have for 10 years because I worry about younger people not knowing history. And I want them to know that Hitler came to power legally. The business community in Germany and in Berlin said, we can control this guy and he's better than the communists. And of course, some years later, 60 million people are dead in World War II. Mm-hmm. I want people to know how we got here. I want them to know the greatness of this country. And I want them to know what we still have to do.
And there's a lot we have to do still, right? I mean, kind of the direction of the country today, it's scary, you know, and a lot of the crime and the people that are in prison and things like that come from what you just said, which is it might be single parent that's not doing the reading or not, right?
There are, you know, a single parent, first of all, could raise a sensation child.
Sure.
And 2 parents could mess it up. Seriously, but you'd rather have 2 loving, caring adults in the home, and getting kids off to a good start is really important. And that means you don't use television as a babysitter because there's no interactivity with television. It's just blaring at you. A little bit of Sesame Street's fine and so forth. But you want to have conversations. You want to read books with them. You want to go to the supermarket and your child is 1.5 or 2 years old and sitting in the shopping cart, and you want to say, let's get 1, 2, 3 of these. And you want to say, this is a square and this is a circle. There are all kinds of ways to learn. Get those early literacy lessons right, and you'll be set for life. I can remember the first book my mother read to me. The one I can remember is The Little Engine That Could. Mm-hmm. And it was written in 1931. I know this because somebody bought me a first edition of it. And if you think about the story, it's a story someone wonders, could I do this? But ultimately had enough chutzpah to get over the mountain. Mm-hmm. And you know, if people ask me, am I ever nervous? I'm absolutely nervous, absolutely insecure. You then need to have the chutzpah to get over it. Well, Henry Ford I, who was not great in being a human, did fine with cars, but he had a lot of trash in his soul. Once said, if you think you can do a thing or think you cannot do a thing, you can. The point of the story being that you have enormous wherewithal within you, but you got to take a chance and you got to use it.
Love that. You know, one of the things I love about this podcast and the position I'm in is having people like you. I had somebody by the name of Michael Udine, I don't know if you met Michael, but he was the past mayor of Parkland, where I live, and also the mayor of Broward County. He's right now a commissioner at Broward. But when I sat down with him, the big takeaway I got from his talk was preparation. He said, I want my kids to be prepared. Now he went to University of Florida. his kids all went to University of Florida, and he had three kids, or he has three kids. And he said, preparation is, and to me, when I meet a young person, if they're prepared, they have an edge, you know? And it sounds like that's a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, preparing your kid. But like you said, for something that seems so simple as counting how many vegetables this is, it's a big deal, especially at that young age, you know? Is there anything else, Dave, as a parent or as a young parent, let's say somebody has a young kid, any other a little?
Well, it kind of all starts with love. And children who grow up without love grow up to be incomplete human beings and frequently do bad things to other people and to themselves, which is just deeply tragic. So start off with love. People need to be hugged, cared for, sung with, talked with, etc. And then children grow in a bunch of different ways. They grow cognitively and intellectually. They grow physically. But they also grow socially, emotionally, behaviorally, developmentally. And this is not having a regimen of every day as a class day beginning at age 2.5 mm-hmm. or 3. Kids also need to play. Mm-hmm. They learn a lot by playing. You need to get along with other human beings. So all five of our children of the age of 2.5 were in Montessori, which was a great path. But it wasn't because we were trying to get them out of the home. It was because we wanted them to learn how to get along with other people, be with other people, feel good about themselves. And just think of this American trend. If I tell you that half the kids aren't ready for kindergarten, which is the fact in Florida, just imagine going to kindergarten or first grade. And all the other kids seem to be, they know what they're doing. They're ahead of the game. You're way behind. And that, number one, is really hurtful. And then you act up and out. A teacher will label you as a troublemaker, we're then off to the races. George W. Bush once talked about the soft bigotry of low expectations. I think our children end up being really good human beings, and their children end up being good human beings. They expect good things from them. It's not a matter of wealth, and resources, of money, and so forth. It's a matter of expecting good things. Believing in people. We were in our family, all 11 of us, sitting around the table. We were expected to be good people. And we didn't have a lot of money. Books were the most likely presents for Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthday, etc. And I can remember when we got the World Book Encyclopedia, and I was 11 years old. I would sit and read the encyclopedia, which had 21 volumes, I now know. But it was just fun to look up things and find out things. And so I've mentored somebody for 8 or 9 years now. Still a work in progress. At Miami-Dade company. Huge sports fan. And I said, pretend you're at the White House for a steak dinner. I've been to never be better dressed. And pretend you're sitting between a famous United States senator, famous author. What are you going to talk about? Because this person has never heard the name of LeBron James. Mm-hmm. I have never wanted any of my children to be too good looking, too, quote, popular, too charismatic, too smart, because then people try to get by on that great God-given strength. But you need more than that. What you really need to know is how to build relationships, have more things to talk about. I've been in 56 countries, so I have a sense of a lot of different kinds of places, a lot of books. I've been in countries that are wealthy. I've been in the Democratic Republic of Congo, child rape victim. I've been in Bangladesh talking about microlending, etc. Whenever I go to another country, I always read several books beforehand about the country's politics, photography, literature, how did it come to be, and so forth. We have to ask
questions. Was that...
Sure. And is that curiosity, did that come obviously at a young age? You mentioned 11 siblings?
No, 9 siblings and mommy and dad.
Okay. Okay. So 9 brothers or 8 brothers and sisters, 9 total, right?
Right.
So was that something that your parents did as a group, said, hey, we're all going to read books now and we're all going to, did they encourage? I mean,
but we would sit, this, remember, this is a farmhouse in northern New York. All of us would gather around the table. I can remember my father quizzing us on government and politics. I can remember one of my siblings being asked at age 8, who's the governor of New York? And she didn't know, and we laughed at her. Age 8, we were expected to know a lot of things. And it was a wonderful way to grow up.
What did your dad do for a living?
Well, at that time, my parents were romantic. They loved each other deeply. And my father had a farm. He had a vision. He was a New Yorker, grew up in Long Island. My father grew up in Sydney. My father and mother had a vision since after the Second World War. We'll have a farm. We'll have 2 ducks, 2 chickens, 2 cows. More or less, I'll write the great American novel, and I'll work at the weekly newspaper, which was called the Sandy Creek News. And the great book didn't work out. The newspaper didn't work out. And the farming was a struggle. The chicken farm, by far the least language farm.
Sure, you worked.
Eviscerate chicken. We all did.
Yeah.
I drove a tractor when I was 10 years old. You wouldn't be allowed to do that kind of thing now. But it was a great way to grow up. And I've always been with people smart, quicker. I think I can outwork. And I'm 82 now, and I'm still working for really hard.
Well, that's the interesting thing. You retired in 1999, so 25 years of being retired.
Yeah.
But you never retired.
No,
you went right
in. I got very interested in the subject of how do you get kids ready for school and life. And so, for instance, in this community, we passed the Children's Trust, which this year will disperse more than $200 million for early intervention. Cole led a campaign with Alex Pinellas, the then executive mayor of Miami-Dade County, for free pre-K for all 4-year-olds in Florida whose parents want it. So I'm not saving my energy for the next world.
That's so great. Now, the Children's Movement and the Children's Trust. The Children's Trust is a government.
Well, it's quasi. It's authorized under state law, the Children's Trust is. The half-mill property tax. But values have risen significantly. So it started out at $67 million this year, $207 million, and it's been passed twice, the second time in perpetuity, it'll be here past my lifetime and even years, and has not had a whiff or a whisper of scandal, and has made difference for thousands upon thousands of children.
What
a blessing that is.
It is. And speaking of blessings, you mentioned a lot about reading books. You're also an author, dedicated life.
I wrote one book, and it came out 5 years ago. Sold 22,000 copies. From the very beginning, I said, I'm not trying to make money, and any money that I make, and I have made, goes to children's work, not to me. But, you know, it's the responsibility of all of us to set some sort of example and try to inspire other people. You know, what any of us can do.
I love it.
So I've been blessed, and I've lived a life that my wife and I have had dinner with Queen Elizabeth and interviewed Fidel Castro for 5.5 hours.
Yes.
One point or another, before, during, or after my first presidency, from Nixon through Biden. So And I don't play golf. I don't play tennis. If our family is all right, then I'm all right. They grow up. They got adult problems. And mommy and daddy can't fix them. You could be there to help.
And now you're probably spending a lot of time with 7 grandkids you have, right?
Yeah, but they're in different places.
Yeah. But don't you meet at, is it upstate New York? Isn't that the...
where I was from, where I grew up.
Yeah, but do you still have, I remember, or maybe it was Maine. I can't remember.
No, Vermont.
Vermont.
They all look alike. So I bought in 1999 an 1840 home in Vermont. It's not fancy, but it does go back to... was this 180, 85 years ago, a long time ago. And every Christmas or every Thanksgiving, we have all 17 of us.
In That's one. Great.
And having the family together is nothing more special. But we're always in touch. And my wife has Alzheimer's, not a small talent. And the children are always in touch. The children live in New York, in Dallas, Texas, Tallahassee, Florida. I'm missing one. Can we go?
Providence.
No, in Vermont.
Oh.
So they live in 5 different places. And they're always in touch. They did a wonderful book for my wife, Bobby, Mommy, high quality book, pictures, lessons, and memories of their lives. What a treasure.
The whole family did that, or the kids?
Kids did it. Yeah. It was their whole project, and it was done as a surprise for my wife. We've been married 60 years as of December 21.
Congratulations, 60.
We're very blessed, and I love my wife more than I ever have. So, and I loved her from the beginning. So,
that's amazing. And Dave, talk about you did a there was a charity walk for Alzheimer's recently, right?
Yes.
Well, talk about that.
Well, I never knew anybody in our own family with Alzheimer's. I've read 14 books on the subject. My wife was had it for about 5 years. I knew nothing about the subject. I've read literally 14 books on the subject and have been involved in some other way. There are 625 Alzheimer's walks in the country. So for the last 3 years, I have worked hard to raise money and have ended up fundraiser.
In the country.
Yeah, but I'm not doing it this year for a specific reason, and I've told the folks, too much of what we raise in Miami-Dade County comes from me. That's not how you build an organization. You gotta have a lot of people. Dave Lawrence isn't going to be here forever. So I'm taking at least a year off for that. If I raise money for a lot of other things.
I know you do. And, So what's next? Is there anything is there going to be another book coming out maybe?
Well, I live a serendipitous life. Yeah. What opportunities come up and what might tomorrow bring? And so I've never had a 5-year or 10-year plan for my life. I would have thought I would have been in the newspaper business all my life and then retired. Although I point out quickly, I don't think retirement is particularly healthy for human beings. They need to be involved. Doesn't mean they need to get paid. They need to be involved. So if I have a lifetime bad habit, I say yes to most everything. And this. And so I'm, for instance, involved in a school, we still say. And a really wonderful man named Mike Fernandez, who's great benefit. Asked me to go look at Cristo Rey, 39 of them in the country. So I went to Spanish and looked at it, was excited. And we opened a Cristo Rey school in July of 2022. And it's a great different kind of model. First, it's only a high school. You have to be poor to get into. You might well be 2 years behind when you enter high school. You go to rigorous academic classes for 4 days. On the fifth day, you go to work for American Airlines, Greenberg, return your money over to the school. That plus step up state doctors is the economic model. Fundamentally, everybody goes to college. And see the difference in the young people at 14, 15, when they enter high school. Even within weeks, just from being exposed to other people, being in an office, getting rigorous academics, really crucial. And the test to get into the school, quote test, unquote, the school, is not what was your academic record. How self-motivated are you? How much of a self-starter are you? And if you have that within your fiber, within your gut, we can make it work. And young people, when they graduate from the school and go to college at a higher rate than the general population of the United States. So it's thrilling.
What's the rate of graduation for the, well, the school's new?
Everybody.
Everybody does?
Oh, sure.
And they're...
if you expect good things from people, you're more likely to get it.
So I'm going to switch gears a little here because I want to ask you for a little advice on this podcast. It's something that I'm considering. I always looked at giving back. Actually, how I met you was through the Kiwanis Club. I was the president of the Kiwanis Club at the time. And they said, we're going to honor Dave Lawrence as the citizen of the year for the Kiwanis Club, which, by the way, I think you need to update your bio. I looked at him and said, I don't think he's got that on there. All the awards you won. Father of the Year. I don't think the one that I gave him is even on there.
Well, but interesting enough, over the years, when you get old enough, they pass awards out like candy. So I've got a lot of candy. And there's only so much other people can tolerate seeing it. So I love Kiwanis. So
yeah, it was great. And that's how I actually connected with you and met you. But, you know, giving back. My point is it felt good to, even when we went to schools and read books to kids and just little things that we did throughout the week. It was a really good organization. And I haven't done that recently as far as getting involved in charities and getting involved in something where it's a give back. And I think that's so important. Homelessness to me, you know, I see, and it seems like it's just growing more and more. And don't forget about California, just in South Florida. It just makes me so sad, especially when you see a younger person on the streets, you know, begging for food. And I think it's like almost like we're so used to it. People, you just drive by and
we have the richest country in the history of the world. And we can spend literally $2 trillion to bring democracy to Afghanistan. I don't think we succeeded at it, but we spent the money. A bunch of people got killed, and that's tragic for families and countries and so forth. But there's something wrong in a country with
that many resources. Yeah.
That 350,000 perfectly legal children in Florida have no health insurance. There's something wrong where 20%+ of children in the state of Florida who are in their early childhood years growing up in full poverty. I'm not advocating socialism. I'm advocating decency. The question here is not whether we have the money. The question is, what are our priorities on spending that money? So here we live in South Florida. It is stunning what homes cost. And a home could be worth $1.5 million now. And it doesn't look that special.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. So let's say you're a teacher and you're making $52,000 a year. Well, not that many years. It's pretty good salary.
Yeah, not today.
Now, how do you buy a home?
And rent. I mean, rent, just forget about owning. Renting a house in Miami. When I lived in Miami 9 years, 10 years ago, we paid $2,500. Nicole and I for the rent in Brickell. I looked the other day. You know what the rent was now? $7,500 for the same unit. So
that's a basically 7,500 units. What's that? 90,000 a year? That's a lot of money.
That's just rent. No food. No. Yeah, exactly. So going back to the homeless issue and the challenge, one of the things, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. What I love that you're doing, by the way, with the children's movement is you're starting at an early age, which is how to fix a problem. It's hard to fix it at, when they're older, and it's and you know.
Yeah, much harder. I despair of sort of fixing the fourth grade, the seventh grade, or the 11th grade. Smartest thing you could do for education reform in this country is deliver the children in better shape. Once you have momentum, you're probably going to have momentum all your life. So take the homeless challenge, and it is a big challenge. Miami has actually done better on this subject because of a great model developed by Alva Chapman and others some years ago. But the reality is 3/4 of people have substance abuse,
mental health, or
and mental health. That is,
it's so bad because
we absolutely, yeah, I do feel insecure. I do wonder what. I like to be nervous when I make a speech because I perform better when I'm nervous. But you've got to have the internal wherewithal to say, I can do this.
The confidence and the belief.
The confidence and belief. There are a number of people in this country growing up without hope, and people don't have hope.
Well, and it takes me back to the story of what you just said of being at your dinner table and your father expected you to know the stuff. Yeah. That's a confidence builder. You know, when you know that the person who you look up to and sometimes might fear, when he says, you're going to know this. I know, I got you. I know you're going to, that's a confidence builder. And that,
well, it's expectations, having high expectations of other people that they can do things helps you. Believe in yourself. Do you believe in yourself?
Yes. You're so this is a perfect segue to my vision for this homeless issue and kind of the, even though it might be a very, very small person, just if I could help one person, but I wanted to use this platform, this podcast, as a way to end the Sprinter because it's portable. And this is what I have in my head. And I want you to, you know, shoot it down correctly, whatever you think. I'd love to hear, because I know you'd always give me an honest opinion. But drive it and walk up to a homeless person. And they might love that I'm just talking to them. And spend the day where I give them hot meals. I give them a hotel for the night. And I bring them in the Sprinter and I talk to them. And I try to get some confidence and motivate them. And with the, even though it's not a huge audience that I have, but there's a lot of CEOs, there's a lot of influential people. And if there's a chance that somebody can give this person a shot, I just look at it like, if I'm in that spot and somebody did that for me, and maybe they're looking for that, we just drive right by. I'm guilty of it, you know? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well,
I mean, there could be danger because you mentioned drugs, mental health.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a particularly fearful sort of thing. I think people need to not only believe in yourself, but have other people believe in you. You need to be a role model for other people. What's possible? I know an extraordinary number of people make a difference in this community and way beyond. You got to train people to do jobs. You got to train people to know how to do lots of skills. But it's all there to be done. No human being ought to be abandoned. And frankly, a fairly good standard, and you don't need to be Christian to know this, is what would Jesus do? And a lot of people quote Jesus and don't live fully Christian lives, in my estimation. Might think they are, but I don't particularly think they are. How do we behave like Jesus would want us to do? And again, I'm not talking about, I'm a lifelong Roman Catholic. I'm not talking about Christianity. I'm talking about somebody who was on the face of the world, who set a good example for other people. You know, my father always used to warn me about trying to save the world, but he sure as heck thought I ought to set a good example that I could make a difference. And that's critical to be able to, by your own life, what's possible in this world.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a quote, right? I mean, there's, you see signs, WWJD, right? I mean, it's a good way to look at it. And it's something that, look, again, as with this, you know, I guess trial that I'm going to do of bringing on a homeless person and seeing if there's a way to, you know, I guess.
But just even one person could make a difference. One of the great stories in human history, one person who made a difference. That person might have been attacked, persecuted, even killed. But the great stories are of individuals who made an extraordinary difference. That's the great stories of America. Why is Lincoln my favorite president? Because he grew all his life, and by gosh, and by God, we were lucky to have him. And a war with 750,000 Americans died in a country of 32 million.
He was the right man. And
totally, yeah, the right man. Yeah. And people didn't know if he was the right man.
But history proved that. But, yeah. Yeah.
But he showed by sure. his life, he only lived to be 56 years old.
Yeah. So I know, look, it's 38 minutes now. I told you we'd keep it under 30. I could go another hour with you, Dave.
No.
It's you're the best. I really appreciate you. Love you, man. And I honestly look up to you more than anybody. I mean,
thank you. But you used a word that's so important. I tell a story in my book about, I was in Detroit. I was running the district, and my father was dying of liver cancer, and I knew he was going to die soon. So I go to his hospital, Tallahassee. Ultimately, I have to go after a couple of days to go back to Detroit. My father was dying. I bend down, put him on his floor. And my father said, "I want you to know, what did I want him to say? I love him." And what? We were close family. We knelt down and said prayers every night. But we didn't use the three words, "I love you." Just, we grew up in a family where those words were, even though we knew we were loved. And it was a wake-up call for me to tell people, I love you.
Oh, man. I love you. Thank you so much, Dave.
Glad to have
you. What a way to end it. Thank you, Dave.